the OTV Sports app. Listen to OTV Sports Radio 24/7, plus all your favorite podcasts, including OTV Gold.
Are you a complete rookie?
The OTV Sports app, available to download now from your app store. The OTV Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Now, we did a flash poll a little bit earlier, and I've got to say that this conversation came about when I was surrounded by Gaelic football people who were not hurling people, who were complaining about hurling being too good at the moment. That was essentially the conversation. Tommy Rooney, who's a dyed-in-the-wool footballer, I was like, there's too much scoring in hurling. I can't. He wasn't having it. And you also are a football mafia person, Owen, leading the charge in this one. So let's have that conversation, right? High scoring hurling, good or bad, says the poll. After Limerick scored 36 points versus Clare and Dublin 231, does the high level of scoring add to the spectacle? Discussion here on OTBAM with Michael Verney at 20 minutes past 8. Let us know your thoughts below. More scores, the better. Too much ruins the game. Doesn't make a difference. Voting closes after Tommy Walsh at 10 past 9 this morning. And so I took that a little bit earlier. I haven't seen the results of this yet, but I think this is ridiculous. What's the problem with the scoring?
It's very noticeable, is the thing. That it is 100% a new trend, and maybe we should be embracing new trends rather than trying to roll back and trying to find whatever that the sport was a few years ago. That it had reached a point of perfection, you feel, in the last decade. The 2010s was the best hurling ever. Now, I think with most sports, things tend to get better the further into the future you go. But is there a sense that the 2010s may lead to a parody of itself in the 2020s? You're looking at the records being broken over the course of the weekend. So between Clare and Limerick on Sunday, they notched 59 points between them. That is a new Munster Championship record with a joint total of 60 scores because Clare got a goal as well. The previous record is 56, racked up by Cork and Tip in 2017. Limerick's total then is the second highest all-time championship points total scored by one team. The highest was in a game between Cork and Westmeath, where Cork scored 40 points last year. This is the sort of score that Limerick put up on Clare, the sort of score that you would expect from an All-Ireland contender up against a promoted team from the Joe McDonagh Cup, for example. Is this a good thing? I think it's a good thing if you're a Limerick person. I think it reflects well on their incredible array of scorers. And maybe that's it. Maybe that's where the conversation ends. But you also look at the other records who come into play over the course of the weekend. 17 championship scores was the record in one game that was held by Eddie Kerr against Galway in 1972. It was matched at the weekend.
I think that might have been an 80-minute game, was it? It was 72, still the 80-minute games. Go on anyway, sorry, yeah.
Well, that supports the argument. It was matched twice over the course of the weekend. Donal Burke with 116, Tony Kelly with 17 points.
Okay, well, look, let me tell everybody that the poll is 37% more scores the better, 47 too much ruins the game, and 20% roughly doesn't make a difference. Michael Verney, good morning to you. How are you?
Ger, how are you?
This might be one of those rare occasions where the hurling people and the football mafia are aligned and they think that there are too many scores, that for once, the Venn diagram, you're all in the middle.
Possibly so. Listen, there's probably a lot of factors that came into it at the weekend. One being, like, it was probably something that was naturally going to happen over the years anyway, just with better quality hurls, probably a lighter ball, which I've kind of said for a good while. This has probably been flagged for a while. It's just probably maybe been accelerated a bit more now with the lack of crowds, maybe lack of pressure as well. If you look at the wide count from even the four competing counties at the weekend, it was very, very low. And I just think it's probably a bit to do with pressure as well. And there's been a lot less pressure on. There's more of an exhibition kind of game feel to it, maybe a challenge game kind of feel to it. And if you look at challenge games down through the years, and I've played in many and played in games where we scored maybe 25 points in a challenge game, and then you might struggle to hit 114 in a championship game. There's just a lot less pressure on, even on the pitch. Just the marking was probably maybe a bit looser than you would have seen before in championship games, where like a lot of the points, maybe even the Tony Kelly came on to they were kind of maybe loose ball where he was running onto ball, whereas in previous championship games that you would have seen with big crowds in particular, there's loads and loads of pressure on. There's pressure on every strike. You know, I'd say six or seven of his scores, he was probably not standing by himself, but he had a free shot at goal. There was not even a hurl in front of him or anything like that. So I do think there's probably a good few different things coming into the mix here. The ball is the one I would have always said, I'm not a good striker of the ball. And if I am able to strike the ball over the bar from 90 to 100 yards, there's probably a small bit of a problem or something that maybe needs to be looked at. But it's across the board, really. It's not just in hurling. If you look at like the golfers, and I know you're both interested in golf, the golfers are absolutely like they're going 330, 340 yards is, you know, easy to a lot of them now. Driving par fours, driving par fives, and it's a lot to do with technology. It's in tennis as well. The serving is probably, you know, as fast and as consistently fast as it's ever been. So it's just a lot to do, probably technology, strength and conditioning. And I would say with the hurling at the weekend and probably for the remainder of this year, the crowd's not been there, less pressure on. There's probably less of a championship feel to it. There's not that pressure even amongst players on the pitch. They're not maybe in on top of each other as much as they would have been. So there's a lot of things kind of coming together here.
I think as well, if you look at the start of the Premier League season and the games last weekend, there is just this natural explosion at the start. Defences aren't fully in tune. There is no videotape. Like this season is not a continuation of what happened in February and March. It's an entirely new season, and we've never had a championship after one game or no games in this instance. So I actually think you're going to see an explosion of scoring very early on. And I think by the time the All-Ireland semi-finals and finals come around, there'll be much tighter marking, there'll be much stronger defensive systems in place. I'd be very surprised if there's 31 points scored by the winning team in an All-Ireland final, but maybe not. I mean, maybe that's exactly what'll happen this year.
I'd agree with you, Ger. I don't think, I would imagine it would be an awful lot tighter. As regards the type of games, whether people kind of like high-scoring games or not, I like the odd high-scoring game, but I do probably prefer, if I was to go back to it, I'd probably look at something like the 2005 Championship, and I'd look at, you know, Kilkenny were beaten 5-18 to 4-18 by Galway in, you know, what's widely regarded as, you know, one of the best games for the last 20 years. 9 goals, 36 points, a great game. And then I don't know if it was a week before or a week after, Cork beat Clare 16-15. And I would take that game every day of the week just because it's so much more of a struggle. And I don't know about you, like I watch a lot of kind of snooker, maybe would be one, even golf would be another one. I like seeing mistakes. I think it's more intriguing probably when lads are making mistakes, when they're missing frees that they should be getting, and it's maybe more of a struggle. That's personally the type of game I like in nearly any sport, because they look nearly more fallible at times. But each to their own. Forwards are definitely going to love these high-scoring games. As a kind of a miserable cornerback in my day, I would definitely prefer these kind of low-scoring struggles maybe more so than the high-scoring games.
I really enjoyed the Donegal Footballers under Jim McGuinness. I thought that was brilliant. I thought that was like a complete outlier being injected into the body of Gaelic football, and watching everybody wrestle and struggle with that was like... That was high-end sport, as it's supposed to be. And then there's a reaction afterwards and things change, and that's how the game moves. So I'd say there's like a good, strong defensive team licking its chops somewhere in the long grass this season going, okay, you keep scoring your 31 points, but let's see what it's like when it's put up to you. Talk to us about the ball a bit more, because obviously the yellow ball became an off-season story here. The colour of the ball surely doesn't matter, does it?
Not really. It's just, I think a lot of the maybe confusion about it was the fact that, all right, we're 2 weeks out from championship and the yellow ball has been officially rubber stamped and it's coming in for this year's championship. There was no probably trial of it during league games, nothing like that. Maybe some teams would have used it in some games under lights over the last couple of years just for greater visibility. But I suppose it is a fundamental change to something that we've all known in the game. Did it matter to me really over the weekend? Not really. The only thing I will say is the evening game, I found it a bit easier to see in the evening game, which is only natural. A luminous ball in more maybe in the dark was easier to see than during the game, during the day on Sunday. I didn't find it that easy to see in the first half. But by all accounts, any players that I was talking to or any even managers, they seemed happy. The quality of the ball is the exact same. It's essentially just a different colour now. It was just maybe that it had been mooted for a while that it was going to come in. It's just that it came in for this championship, and maybe managers and players only had 2 or 3 weeks warning for it. But I don't think it's probably not much of a talking point at this stage, I would say.
We need to get a big bag of those yellow slitters down to Babs Keating this week, so we can soak them in a bath of water. We can reduce the scores for the next couple of weeks, and everything will be fine. Just one other thing on that, like John Colley was saying that the ball was in play a lot more on Sunday. Like, I wonder, is this a factor? Is that, like, just the quote he says, I think puck outs are an issue because they're coming very fast. Maybe in a stadium where the thing is full, maybe the referees need to buy themselves a little bit more time in those circumstances before they blow the whistle. Is that actually a factor in this, that, I don't know, lads need to be fitter, first of all, because their ball's going to be in play a lot more, but also the unintended consequence of that is that you're going to have a much higher scoreline?
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. Like, there's so many things going on for a referee, you know, particularly you would say in the middle of Croke Park with 82,000 people around you. And it does, there's all sorts of pressure that noise and fans and different things can put on you. Now it's just basically, it's just the game. And that's all the players have to focus on. And it's all that the referee has to focus on, umpires, everything. They have one sole job. There's not really anyone affecting them. So when the ball goes wide, like, there's no noise, you know, same when the ball goes over the bar, it could be a little bit of a din maybe for 5 or 6 seconds celebrating the score or whatever, and then the ball is, you know, and we're moving and we're back moving again. Now the ball goes over the bar and it's just like Ever Quilligan in goals for Clare the other day, he was ready to go straight away. There's nothing stopping them now from starting back up again. The referee is generally, as it's true, they are a lot fitter than they were in the last maybe 20 years. So they're back out in the middle of the field ready to go again, and the ball is coming out an awful lot quicker. I don't have the stats on it, but I would imagine the ball is in play this year, particularly in those two games, and even in league football, I'd say the ball is in play a good bit more than it was maybe 10 years ago, where like a keeper can't, you know, flick the ball away and try and buy time in the corner now, or do these little tricks that they do, all those little kind of things just to buy themselves a bit of time or kill momentum. Like, the ball went over the bar, over the Clare bar, I think 4 times in the first 2.5 minutes of the second half, and they were 4 down, having been level at half time, and there was very little the keeper could do, because the ball just has to go back and play pretty quickly. There's no excuse for it not to now at this stage, and the crowd and everything like that does kind of feed into that. It does make the game probably a bit slower. So I would say definitely the ball is in play an awful lot more than it would have been in previous years.
What will Tipperary have made of that second half performance and that blitz at the start of the second half from Limerick? Are you sitting there as a member of the Tip management team going, great, let the whole country now think this Limerick team are back to their unstoppable level, and that takes a little bit of pressure off us? Or are you like, oh Jesus, these guys are pretty good?
Yeah, well, I would have been one of them last year, where I would have said that, like, the best team didn't win the All-Ireland last year, for me anyway. I would have had Limerick down as the best team, and I still have them as the best team at the moment. So from a Tip point of view, I don't know if there's ever been less pressure on a team going for back-to-back than this year, and I don't know if there's ever been less pressure on a Tipperary team going for back-to-back as well. Like, it's 1964-65 since the last did it. One of the big things, like in 2011, a lot of people would say, you know, they didn't respond to the pressure that well. They got back to the All-Ireland final and were beaten by a brilliant Kilkenny team by 4 points. And in 17, you know, they didn't back up again, and they were beaten in a semi-final by an amazing Joe Canning point by a point. So, like, what were people talking about at the start of this year? You know, Sheedy, the last 3 years that Sheedy's been over Tip, they've won All-Ireland in 2010, 2019, and sorry, the last 2 years, and now he's going for a de facto kind of a 3 in a row, I suppose you could say. But like, there's no pressure around it, and we did a jury in our Championship magazine in the Independent a couple of weeks ago, and Tipperary weren't tipped up once even to win Munster or the All-Ireland. And it just, like, would that have happened in previous years when Tipperary were going for back-to-back? No way. Because a lot of nearly, you know, Limerick, there's probably more pressure on Limerick now to get their hands back on Lean than there is on Tipperary to do back-to-back, which is a strange one. As regards Sheedy, what would he have been looking at the other day? I think definitely one thing they would have looked at was the fact that John Kiley and his management team refused to kind of bend to the way Clare were playing. And that can be both a good thing and a bad thing. So I'd imagine nearly any other team in the country would have had a man marker on Tony Kelly, a player that scored 6 from play in the first half. Kiely, because he was in the full forward line and maybe with, you know, a rookie cornerback and a rookie fullback somewhat, didn't want to put a man marker on and didn't want to put someone following him, maybe where they could take him somewhere, take the player they were on somewhere uncomfortable maybe for them. He went out to the half forward line. Dermot Burns is not a man marker, and Tony Kelly was on him. Tony Kelly got 2 points. I think Dermot Burns got 2 points as well. But they refuse to fundamentally change the structure of their team just to go after, you know, some other player on the opposition and keep them out of the game. So he didn't want to put a man marker out. Maybe Sean Finn would have been the obvious kind of example. He didn't want to put him out wing back, and then he's losing his launch pad of one of his half backs, which would be striking, you know, a long ball, capable of scoring, capable of setting up attacks, just to negate one of their best players. And I definitely think that's something Sheedy will look at, and I think it's something that even someone like Kilkenny or Galway will look at later on in the year. Where can we put TJ Reid to maybe make it as awkward as possible for Limerick, or force them to fundamentally change what they're going to do? And if they're not going to fundamentally change, they could put TJ Reid in corner forward. And if he's not been man-marked, he can loop around and do what Tony Kelly did the other day and make hay. And they have a couple of other... Clare didn't have maybe a couple of other players to share the load with Kelly, but the likes of Tip definitely will. They have 5 or 6 forwards that can really hurt you. So I'd imagine they'll be trying to put maybe Shamey Callan and maybe John McGrath into these situations where they're maybe going to be marking a Barry Nash who's not used to playing cornerback, or marking a Dan Morrissey who's not used to playing fullback. So I definitely think Sheedy will look at the matchups. I think we know what we're going to get from Limerick. We know where they're all going to play. And probably Sheedy will probably look at and think, how can I best maximise what I have to go against that, while kind of putting them in a couple of uncomfortable positions? Like, you can't afford to leave Seamus Callan score, you know, a couple of goals and then have John McGrath and Bubbles and Bonner Matter and a couple of other lads chipping in. Clare didn't have anyone to chip in with Tony Kelly the other day, but Tip will be a different prospect altogether.
Yeah, sorry.
It just does seem that not only do you have more options in the Tipperary and the Kilkenny forward ranks, you've got more physicality as well. Like, I mean, Tony Kelly's help the other day was Shane O'Donnell, as good a hurler as he is, a more physical presence in that full forward line, like a John Conlon, would have had a far better chance of getting any change off that Limerick team, who are just a team of man mountains at this point, and they seem to have got bigger over lockdown. How big a factor is that going up against a big full forward line, or even a big half forward line, and just trying to beat Limerick up front with brute physicality?
Yeah, from 5 to 12, they're absolutely huge. Now, so a couple of the full-back players probably a bit smaller, and even in the full-forward line, the likes of Graham Mulcahy, like Aaron Gillan, would be probably what you would class as maybe smaller players, but that's in comparison to Grod Hegarty and these lads. When Kilkenny took them on last year, they tried to take down that pillar of the half-back line and the half-forward line, and they did it unbelievably well. And it requires like a Walter Walsh playing wing forward who's going to be like a wrecking ball and who's going to, you know, basically put Hegarty and these guys on the back foot and physically match them, or at least match them. They have to at least match them or overpower them. It took an Adrian Mullen kind of to do that as well. John Donnelly last year as well. So I think if you're going to take Limerick down, you know what they're going to get. You know the half forwards are going to pull out. You're just going to try to have to match them physically in that kind of sector, particularly in their half forward. And look at their half forward the other day. Scored 12 points from play. So it'll be interesting to see what way they do it. Last year in the Munster final, Kyle Hayes pulled out. I think Páraic Maher was centre-back that day. He pulled out, you know, 100 yards from goal, was picking up ball, and Páraic Maher didn't see the amount of ball that he normally would. It'd be interesting to see what way Tip go with their backs on Sunday. Brendan Maher picked up Aaron Gillan the last day in a kind of a man-marking job when they hurled him in the Munster final last year and was out of position. He was brilliant. Would it be interesting to see, will he play wing-back? Will they try and go toe-to-toe with these kind of three physical brutes in the half-hour line? And I think kind of Kilkenny set the template last year. It was just this constant, the half forwards and the centre forward, constant work up and down the line, up and down the line, and just kind of spoiling those guys, who Hegarty and Hayes and Morrissey, who they sit so deep, and they're kind of auxiliary halfbacks almost, but then they're able to get up and have the strength and condition, I suppose, to get up and be able to play in the forwards as well when they're attacking. So I think if you're going to take Limerick down, you're going to have to at least match them, match their half-forward line. I think that's kind of their pillar at the moment. Like, a lot of people would say that their halfbacks aren't necessarily defenders. Like, Tony Kelly got a couple of points the other day, Dermot Burns is probably more focused on going forward and getting the ball going forward. Maybe you could say the same about Hannon and probably to a less extent Paddy O'Loughlin as well. But the half forwards are the guys that come back and actually defend for them, and probably Will O'Donoghue in midfield as well. So you've got to create, you're going to have to match them from 5 to 12. And probably Tipperary do have a fair few physical brutes, the likes of Michael Breen, Dan McCormack, probably Bonner Matter, that probably could match them in those sector. So I don't expect anything like that sort of high scoring game that we had last Sunday. I'd be more like maybe 21 or 22 scores each when the two of them meet, because I just think it's going to be an awful lot tighter around that middle sector.
And tip to get a load of goals?
Well, they're definitely going to go after the Limerick full back line anyway. They're definitely going to try and get ball in there as quick as they can. Like, they don't have that same versatility in the full back line now. Dan Morrissey is full back, having played wing back probably all his career. They're not going to probably put him out to cornerback. They can't move him out to cornerback like they would with a Mike Casey. They can't move a Barry Nash from cornerback into fullback, maybe like they would with a Sean Finn or a Richie English. So I definitely think you're probably going to see a fairly stacked Tipperary full forward line, and they have the players where they could stack their full forward line with Callanan at 14, John McGrath at 13, and maybe Bubbles at 15. And that would be a really, really interesting prospect. I'd be amazed if they don't try and go after that full back line.
Just on Saturday night's game then, I guess it's impossible to not look at Dublin without the context of Kilkenny coming up this weekend. But that Donald Burke performance was unbelievable, Michael. It just shows what they've been missing, especially last season without him. Is it going to be a Tony Kelly situation, though, where if you stop Donald Burke, you've stopped the Dubs?
No, not as much, John. I don't think, no. He obviously chipped him at 116 the other day. This would have been well flagged from, you know, a couple of years ago. He's been brilliant with DCU. He's been brilliant with Dublin when he was in there as well. And just the fact that he wasn't obviously around for last summer. He spent the summer hurling in America, I believe. He's a massive, massive talent. When he gets the ball, I suppose, how quick he's able to strike. You think you're in on top of him, and all of a sudden the ball has gone over the bar. He's a lovely forward. The only thing I will say is, that goal he got the last day, I don't think he would have reached the 21-yard line against Kilkenny. He would have been left into the middle of next week. And he just wouldn't. Like, you telling me Pádraic Walsh or Hugh Lawler or Paddy Deegan or one of these guys aren't just going to put up a roadblock there. They definitely will. But they brought on Mark Schutte the other night. They brought on Liam Rush. They brought on Eamon Trolley or Dillon as well. They have subs to come in. Danny Sutcliffe, not back to himself or back to 2013 form, but definitely probably offering a bit more than he was last year. I think Ronan Hayes inside is a great talent as well, very, very strong in the air too. So I do think they've a bit more just than Burke, and I think they have good backup if they needed. Like, they can bring in Dillon after 20 minutes if they needed. Mark Schutte can definitely turn a game, and we've seen Liam Rush a full forward before as well. So they have kind of options. I think Matty Kenny probably realised that was probably maybe an over-reliance on the likes of, we'll probably see Colin Keeney in the 26 as well, maybe David Tracy too. Probably thought there was an over-reliance on them last year, that maybe like a 37 or 38-year-old, they shouldn't have to be relying on him. So he brought in a few new faces, and now they have the experience coming off the line, which is definitely going to be interesting. I don't see them beating Kilkenny personally, but I do think it'd be an interesting one going into the two games this weekend. How much of a benefit will Dublin having a game under the belts be, and same with Limerick coming in against Tipperary, how much of a benefit will that be? I know from playing myself that I'd always prefer to have a game under my belt and take away that kind of bit of freshness. You can almost be too fresh. So I think that will definitely benefit Limerick, and it will benefit Dublin. I don't see Dublin beating Kilkenny. I think it'd be a very, very interesting game. Well, I just think Kilkenny would have too much up the other end between TJ, Colin Fenley, and I think Owen Cody is a fair shout to start, and he's been brilliant in challenge games recently. I think he scored 3-5 against Clare in a recent challenge game. So they've got loads of options. You throw in Richie Hogan, John Donnelly, Walter Walsh, Conor Fogarty. Killian Buckley is kind of coming back from a thumb injury now as well. Kilkenny have slowly developed this big, big panel again. They had Billy Ryan inside in the forward line too, and they're definitely going to be there or thereabouts. If Dublin were to beat them, it'd be a massive statement of intent, but I don't see it, even though I think it'll be a very interesting game, and Galway-Wexford very interesting too, and then Tip and Limerick as well. It's some bonanza of a weekend ahead.
It's like All-Ireland hurling semi-final weekend, except everybody gets a second bite of it as well, so plenty going on. Michael, great to have you with us this morning. Thanks a million.
Cheers, guys.
As Michael pointed out there, a ridiculous weekend of hurling. So 3:45 Saturday afternoon, Kilkenny against Dublin. That one's in Croker. Then at 6:15 in Croker, it's Galway against Wexford. At 3:30 on Saturday afternoon, it's Cork against Waterford in Semple Stadium. And then on Sunday, it's Tip against Limerick with a 4:00 throw-in for that one. There's also Christy Ring, Nicky Rackard, Laurie Marr and John McDonough over the weekend as well. Westmeath against Kerry, Carlow against Antrim, Down, Derry, Donegal, Armagh, Tyrone, Mayo, and in the Christy Ring, it's Kildare against Wicklow and Fermanagh against Cavan. So plenty going on in that one.
Talking points from the weekend, we might just spool back 24 hours because there's a good Kilkenny tint to what we saw last night. Is anybody in Kilkenny going to be afraid of what they saw from Dublin, or is there a sense that they got a few dangerous threats up front especially that can cause a lot of problems next weekend?
Yeah, well, when Dublin are on song, you see, they can put it up to anyone. You look at last year, I know they got bit by Laois down in Port Laois and that great day for Laois hurling, and but previous to that, was it the week or two before that, they beat Galway. You know, Galway, who had been in the All-Ireland final the year before, All-Ireland champions the year before that. So on their day, Dublin can beat anyone. Looking at it last night, you had Liam Rush as a sub. You had Mark Shute coming on as a sub. You know, Eamon Dillon coming on as a sub and scoring that great goal. They have the panel this year. So Kilkenny will be the favourites, no doubt, because of, you know, they have the big names and they seem to be in the, from looking at the club campaign, they seem to be in the form of their lives as well. But Dublin, you've Owen O'Donnell full back, like, you've Donald Burke was brilliant there last night, he was incredible, like, from play and from freeze. So Dublin, Brian Cody doesn't do complacency anyway, so they won't go in with Nelson in their head only, this is the biggest match of their lives. But yeah, they should be wary of Dublin because on their day they can do anything.
Yeah, like what they showed in the Leinster Championship last year, sometimes forgotten because of the defeat to Laois, but they got out of their group, they beat Galway to get out of their group when it mattered, and that's the sort of kick that are in this Dublin team.
Yeah, there is. And like the Matty Kenny is over him, like, you know, he's won two club All-Irelands and two county finals, well, probably more county finals with Coola when he was over that great Coola team. So there's a lot of them on that team, so they know how to win big games. They have been there on the biggest stage, beating the biggest counties. So yeah, there is a kick in him and there's a toughness, like Chris Crummie. I love Chris Crummie. Like, it's strange to see him up in the front, yeah. You know, centre, like, he was always kind of that tenacious wing back, tenacious centre back. He kind of drives on the whole team. He's kind of like your Virgil van Dijk kind of a. That's the kind of presence I think he has. And up in the forwards, then he started shooting the lights out then again last night, but more importantly probably going through the tackles and then laying off a pass. So like he's definitely vital for the likes of Keane Boland, more of a mover and more of a runner, you know, type Aaron Gallant type of a player. On the other side you have Donald Burke as well. So yeah, I think Crummie, like, is if he can come with the form that he's shown so far this year, yeah, there'll be a shout.
It's hard to not associate your Kilkenny feelings, I'd imagine, for what you saw from Limerick today and the way Kilkenny performed against Limerick the last time they met in a big game. Kind of, it's just hammered home to me today anyway, how impressive that performance was by Kilkenny last year, the way they tore into Limerick so early in that All-Ireland semi-final. Are they watching that from an All-Ireland sense today and thinking to themselves that Limerick are possibly going to come through the front door again this year and they'd love to get another crack off them, perhaps even one stage further this year in an All-Ireland final? I know they won't be thinking it too far, but from your own perspective, what does today say about their prospective All-Ireland hopes?
Yeah, they probably won't. I think on their day, no matter who they're playing, they'll think they're going to beat them. Yeah. That's the way Brian Cody, that's the way the James McGarry's, that's the way they build up their teams going into any game. They don't ever feel inferior to anyone, no matter how many, we'll say, injuries they've had, no matter what their form is like in the league or the championship so far. Every game they treat it as a once-off, and I would kind of compare them a lot even to this Limerick team, so it seemed to be similar type of an attitude. You go back to last year's All-Ireland semi-final, like, a lot of the kind of commentary after the game was Limerick were might have got complacent and this and that. Limerick came back, like, just it was just an awesome performance from Kilkenny. They just came to the game and they just scored and scored, and their intensity was just incredible. I think the Limerick probably hadn't experienced that intensity probably in that championship so far, and I'd say it just took them that couple of minutes to get used to it. But one, like, they were 7 or 8 points down to Kilkenny, came back into the game, went behind again to Kilkenny, and then, sure, only for the last, you know, was it a 65 or wasn't a 65 from the sideline. That was the only thing separating them in the end. So I thought last year's semi-final, was not because Limerick were poor. It was just one of these performances out of the, you know, it was just brilliant from Kilkenny. So I think that's what I'll give them the belief, is that on their given day, as you said, if they can match Limerick, they can match anyone. They won't be thinking about Limerick, but they won't be afraid of anyone either, you know.
We've kind of touched on this earlier on, but just to get your final opinion on this, how do you stop Limerick, basically?
Yeah, a lot of luck. Yeah. A few goals. Listen, they can be beaten. There's no doubt about it. Tipperary beat them last year. I'd say it was in the Munster round robin. Mm. Like, I was looking at the results coming up to this game today. Like, in their last five championship meetings with this Clare team, Clare won three times, Limerick twice. That's since 2015. I know they beat Clare convincingly last year, but the previous 2 years Clare had won. So this Limerick team can be beaten. So they're playing Limerick, or playing Tipperary next week. I wouldn't see them as clear favourites in that game.
Yeah.
That Tipperary team, you have the Bubbles, the Wires, Noel McGrath, John McGrath, like, these are all players, you know, once in a lifetime type players of their era. And a lot of them Tipperary players have three All-Irelands in their back pockets. They know how to win big games, whether it's Munsters, All-Ireland semi-finals or finals. Go back to All-Ireland semi-final last year. I thought it was the character that Tipperary team showed. Man sent off, John McGrath, unfortunate there to be sent off, and looked like they were dead and buried. But they won that game. They didn't even get luck. They won the ball, played around with it over the bar, showed huge character. So I'd say Liam Sheedy will be happy enough looking at that today, because I always find when you're playing a top team, when they win by 10 or 12 points, it's much it's much easier coming kind of under the radar. Towards if Limerick had a poor game today, they'd be all guns blazing the next day. So I'll give it Tipperary every chance next week.
Finally then, Tommy, the big talking point of the weekend, yay or nay on the yellow slitter?
I keep forgetting about it. So I notice it in the warm-ups, and it looks like there's a lot of tennis balls around them. I saw the lads, you know, they weren't allowed in the pitch probably earlier on. They were poking around here, and I was wondering why they're poking around with tennis balls. I said, this must be a new thing. I was going to get tell the Royal manager to get a few tennis balls for us. So listen, I don't really notice them. The one thing I was worried about was that the players were saying they used them in Boston last year, and they were rock hard, and they were kind of breaking their hurdles and weren't travelling very far, but there was no problem with them there. Like, your old Hegarty Kyleys, they're all scoring them off the run there tonight, Keen Boland last night. So that is grand. I don't really mind either way, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think Limerick mind too much either. No. Cheers, Tommy.
All right, Owen, good man.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.